Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more. At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about apparitions at the moment of death with author Daniel Burke. What I found really interesting with your book, and I find it interesting with a lot of paranormal topics, is that it's not just in Western civilization. It's not just current times. It's not just goes back to the 1800s. This is something that's been happening across the world deep into time. You know, we can, you go way, 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 way back because we were talking about the Egyptians. I think it's so fascinating to me that there can be so many experiences over such a vast amount of time, over such a vast amount of space, but yet there are very, very, very strong similarities between these stories.
Absolutely. And like, it speaks to the extent to which, as I say, it speaks to the extent to which this is a fundamental aspect of the human experience. So like, whatever kind of way you want to interpret this, obviously, there will be those who interpret it as evidence for survival of consciousness. That's a very common interpretation, even among more skeptical researchers. There will also be those who assume that it's in some way, some form of error of memory or some sort of delusion of the mind, etc. But the point is that, it's speaking to your point, is that whatever it is, it's a fundamental aspect of the human experience. It's something that's so fundamental and expected that you can essentially predict its occurrence. You can essentially say this will happen in a certain population within a certain time. It's the entire reason I started collecting these accounts in numbers, because I knew I would find them. I knew that this was such a fundamental aspect of the human experience that I would find them. So obviously you could also look at it as, okay, the reason that it's so widespread is because there's something to it. It's real. It really is the representation of evidence for something beyond this life. You could also say that it is evidence of something like deja vu. It's evidence of some sort of quirk of human psychology, for example. What, again, just to reiterate, whatever way you account for it, it is a fundamental aspect of the human experience. And I think for that reason, it deserves far more attention than it's been given, scholarly or otherwise. It really does.
And I think sometimes when you can't put your hands on something, you can't physically feel it, you can't physically prove it, you just have to take people's word for the fact that they had this vision or this experience or even in a dream. You know, a lot of times I think people dismiss the dream as, oh, it was just a dream, when it wasn't. It was an actual person coming through. I think most of us have had a visitation dream of some kind. And I think, once again, like going back to when you were talking about playing guitar and being in that state, I think in our dream state, our loved ones can get through in when you're in your dreams, in when you're dreaming.
Absolutely.
So to me, I think that's why people dismiss it, because you can't actually prove that it happened. You can only take someone's word for it.
It's a very interesting point, because the reason the crisis, even in that regard, like what you're saying absolutely applies in many cases. But with the crisis apparition, the reason why it's so interesting and sets itself apart from many phenomena is because in some sense, you can quote unquote prove it, because you can at least prove the coincidence. It's not really debated that the coincidence occurs. It's just the explanation of it. Like, so if you have an after-death communication, as they're called, which is a general seeming communication with a loved one after they've died, you already know they're dead. Maybe they appear in your kitchen for 5 minutes. Something like that is common. Maybe you kind of see a vista in front of you and you see them moving through it. There's many different ways in which it occurs. You could maybe account for that in some sense as being related to the wishes, desires, wants, and needs of the individual. The problem the crisis apparition presents that theory is that in the most ideal cases, the individual is entirely unaware of the predicament of the person who is at a distance. Yet the experience, it's not only that it coincides with it, but the apparition, for example, can represent many truthful aspects of itself to the individual. For instance, the nature of the death may be conveyed upon the apparition, something the individual couldn't have known. There are even more fundamental ways in which we could talk about it. For instance, I could put it very simply is that, like, and this is something that's also kind of been overlooked and something I'm working on at the moment, is that even just the simple act of something, of seeing somebody, for example, you're sitting in your room, you turn around, you see the form of a loved one waving goodbye, okay? Now, you don't know that that loved one is dead at the time, okay? You find out later that they happen to die at that exact time. The coincidence itself is fascinating enough, absolutely. But wait a minute, it's even stranger that that apparition is acting in a contextually relevant manner to its situation. It's behaving in a manner that actually represents its situation. It's waving goodbye, mm-hmm. despite the fact that you had no context. There's nothing in your mind that would reasonably contextualize. And in other words, it's strange enough you're having the apparition at that moment, usually the first apparition of the individual's life, by the way. It just happens to occur at the moment of a distant death, but that apparition is also representing contextually relevant aspects of its actual predicament. That's the fundamental mystery of the crisis apparition, and that's why it deserves more discussion and can't be lumped in with kind of the many other easier to pass off kind of happenings of potential happenstance and coincidence and wish fulfillment. And these are real phenomenon, absolutely. Bereavement induced hallucinations, etc., these are real phenomenon too, but they, unfortunately, for those people who would be fundamentally positively skeptical and denialist, the crisis apparition can't be so easily filed away,
especially when you just reading your book, when there's just example after example after example of it happening to people over this vast amount of time.
And over,
so,
and over.
There's just something to that, and it would be, I would love to know how it works and how sometimes it works and other times, you know, a loved one passes and there's nothing with that person. I had a really good friend who passed away, and I just was convinced I would have some experience in a dream, or I just knew he was going to come to me. Wow. And his death came as a total surprise to me. There was nothing at all from him. And I just knew, because we were so close, I just knew there'd be something. And there wasn't. So when he did pass, I was so shocked by it. I knew it would happen. I just didn't know it would happen then. So interesting.
That's really interesting. That really is. There's so many interesting aspects of what you just said, because first of all, it speaks to what we were just referencing, is that you were entirely convinced that you would see that, and you had the sense, or at least you certainly had a very strong conviction that it would occur, and yet it didn't. So that speaks to the extent to which you cannot explain these things away as the simple wish fulfillment and desires of the individual, because we know that simply wishing for an apparition does not conjure an apparition. We know that. Being honest, I'm not like hugely interested in deep debates about those aspects of it, just because both sides are just so, you know, specifically convinced of their position that there isn't much room for kind of rational conversation. Because like, just as an example, like I've spoken to many people who will just dismiss offhand the idea that this experience could represent anything other than the coincidence. And yet, like, there is so much work done which kind of rebuts the entire idea that only coincidence could explain these experiences. But I don't hold that against anyone. I'm just saying that it's hard to kind of have a conversation when people are that kind of, you know, convinced of their position.
I find that to be the case with a lot of paranormal and unexplained things. I've talked to so many people who will say something like, yeah, I don't believe in that. But this one time, and then they'll go on to tell you the most paranormal thing I've ever heard. And I'm like, well, how do you explain that then? How can, I don't understand how you think it doesn't occur, but yet it occurred. How do you sync that up in your brain?
That's very common. That's very,
it's very common.
It's very
common, isn't it?
It really is. And like, honestly, like I've seen it myself, so many people will say, listen, I don't believe in this type of thing, but this is what happened to me. And actually, it's just this defense mechanism. It relates back to the original account you told of your friend who said, this might sound crazy. You know, it's a safety net. It's a way, it's just a protective mechanism of saying that. It's a way that you can, if it turns out that what you said was false, you will be able to look back and say, well, I actually did account for the possibility that it could be false. It's just a way of kind of presenting yourself as a bit, as a way of being able to defend yourself later, maybe. But yeah, it really is interesting how common that is. And there are even, like, I don't remember the name of the website, but there is a website specifically dedicated to, it's a place where like mainstream academics can go and anonymously write about their kind of paranormal, non-ordinary experiences. It's like some sort of AA for paranormal experiences, because they're so disinclined to present these types of experiences to their peers, because they would just be absolutely hounded and disbelieved. And there's obviously a vast history to why that is, the kind of philosophical biases that underpin the kind of prevailing thought processes of Western academics in the 21st century, et cetera, et cetera. But fundamentally, it is the case that we live in a time and an environment where these types of things are not easily spoken of. And I find that fascinating. It's unfortunate, but what it does allow us to at least say is that for the most part, almost all of these kinds of experiences wherein that qualification is used are much more common than we even know now.
And don't you suppose there are a lot of people who have had an experience and then brushed it off? Could be, it was just a dream. I didn't really see that. I don't, you know, it was some weird coincidence, when they were actually having this experience.
Yeah, that's a great point. I would say that is absolutely the case. You could say the same thing with nature. I don't know. Like, I mean, we could be looking at, there could be some sort of, like, communication is just such a specific thing, language. Like, there could be things being communicated to us right now that we aren't even aware is language or words or concepts. Like, I'm not sure if I'm being clear, but it's kind of like, there could be, If nature, for instance, there could be a way in which nature communicates, but we aren't even aware that it's communicating, because we don't have the capacity to even perceive that some form of communication is occurring. So it speaks to your point that there could be individuals who have these types of experiences. Or do you know something? A very easy way to get this across would be that one thing that's actually very commonly observed about apparitions is that they're, and this actually kind of goes against many people's conceptions, at least kind of popularly, is that they're often entirely indistinguishable from real people. Like, there's often no sense that they're actually an apparition. Now, to be very clear, there commonly is something that sets them apart also. Maybe they're glowing, for example. But the actual form itself is less often see-through, for example, something commonly thought of as ghostly. They're often indistinguishable from the individual. So my point to say that is that if that's the case, then by definition, there could be many times when you've seen an individual and just simply were not aware that you were looking at something otherworldly, some apparitional form, because we know from the literature that they're indistinguishable. So I think that's the most easy way to illustrate the reality of the point that you just made.
Now, in the research of the book, you obviously came across hundreds of stories. Do you have one that you really liked for some reason, or one that you found more interesting, or one more compelling to you?
You know something? It's one of my biggest fears is that question, because
there are too many to choose from.
It's okay. It's one of my biggest fears because...
And of course I would ask you that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. There's so many, but at the same time, there are certain accounts that stick out to me, sometimes for a definable reason, other times for no specific reason. I suppose like anything that you find attractive, like food or art or something. I don't necessarily know why I do, but I do. But like, for whatever reason, there is an account that stuck out to me, which was, it occurred actually on the HMS Beagle, which was the ship that a young Charles Darwin took to Tierra del Fuego. And there was a guy on that journey called Jemmy Button, I believe, who was a native of Yamana from Tierra del Fuego. And during the course of that journey to the islands, this is, just to be clear, this is after returning from, because Darwin had actually taken Jemmy across to Europe, but they were now returning back to his homeland. But on the way, one of his shipmates noted that there was something a bit off with Jemmy, for example. He seemed a bit distant and strange. And it turned out that Jemmy had had a dream that a man came to his bed and whispered to him that his father had died. And when they arrived at Tierra del Fuego, they found that his father had actually died around that very time. And what's one of the interesting, apart from the fact that that's one of the stories that stuck out to me, it's just interesting that Jemmy himself, he didn't necessarily find this disconcerting existentially in the same way that maybe somebody like from the West might. In other words, it's not the paranormal is often intriguingly relative in that way. So in Jemmy's culture, it wouldn't have necessarily been the most surprising thing. It may even have been expected that, of course, that if somebody dies, I'm going to receive the news in this manner. Because you have to remember, in many of these indigenous native cultures, like their entire sense of the cosmos is so fundamentally different. It's so connected to the dream world, the real world. Everything is connected in this kind of vast web of communication. So in other words, of course that this message may be communicated to me. You will find the same thing often in the Middle Ages as well, at many times during the height of the Middle Ages. Like the expectation of something supernatural isn't as surprising as it may be for us, for example. But I always make the qualification that, yes, that's interesting, but of course, like you can ultimately say everything is kind of ordinary in a way, if you get down to it, because it's occurring and therefore it's meant to occur. Let's not let that take away from just how kind of fundamentally mysterious and frankly at times beautiful these experiences can be.
So once the book is out there for a while, I could see you getting a lot of contemporary experiences. I could see people reaching out to you and sharing their experiences. That could be a whole nother book. When you think about that.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you something interesting there is that, first of all, I hadn't even thought of that until maybe a month ago. I realized, oh, maybe people will actually kind of send me their experiences, which I would love, because something I would love to truly do is to present a book full of experience that I have collected myself, kind of in the typical manner of a kind of a folklorist or something. But something you've just kind of reminded me of something too, is that in this book, on the first page, there is a part that says, if you want to connect with the author, you can mail a first class letter to Inner Traditions, which is my publisher. But it's, for whatever reason, it didn't come about that my email was put there. So now I'm actually worried that I won't get that many accounts on. Well, unfortunately, but
we can certainly share your email right now if you would like to.
So if anyone wants to send me accounts, I would be happy to hear them. And just to put it out there, it is Daniel_Burke, which is Bourke, then _89@hotmail.com.
Do you have a website too?
Yes, I have a I have a LinkedIn, my Twitter is where my ex rather I still call it Twitter.
I know
where I. It's very hard. Is near_death_fe. That's me. You'll find me there on X, and I often post cross-cultural accounts of extrasensory perception and other interesting tidbits there. I like to think they're interesting anyways.
Yeah. So people can check that out. Now, the next book you mentioned, that comes out next year. And then you said there's a third book too?
Yes, I have.
You've been busy.
I've just recently handed in the manuscript for a third book with the same publisher, Inner Traditions. I've been very gracious in that regard. And this is a book, do you mind if I give a quick...
I'd love to hear, yeah.
Okay, so we don't have a title yet, but it's about the concept, the phenomenon of déjà rêve, which is basically the idea of, I have dreamed this before. But it's interesting in that it's separated itself from déjà vu. Basically, almost no literature exists on déjà rêve. It is the experience wherein you, for example, meet a person or are in a place. But I concentrate in this book on the meetings with people because they're often very powerful meetings and important meetings in the individual's life. So you meet the individual, and it's not only that you feel like you've dreamt of them before. You actually know. You have the conviction that you've dreamt of them before. And in many cases, you have actually recorded this dream, sometimes years in advance, for example, sometimes days, months, weeks, years, even decades at times. It's very interesting. So this book organically came about because as I was sifting through the folklore, as I was reading the tales, I started to realize, oh, this idea of dreaming of somebody that before you've met them is actually incredibly common in the folklore. In fact, it's one of the most common stories that I came across. And when I looked into it, I realized there hasn't been much written on this, specifically in the context of this so-called quote-unquote déjà rêve, which is a French term that I believe was coined in the 19th century. So I have written a book dealing with this. It takes the same approach as these two books, the cross-cultural and historical approach, though I will say in this book there are more modern accounts, and I've even included many accounts that I've collected from my own on informants, which is something I actually am very happy with. So I hope that sounds interesting. And that's something that people look forward to.
Well, I can't wait to talk about both those books when they come out. And I think this book too, a lot of our listeners will really connect because as I was reading it, it kind of validated my own experiences that I shared. And I never knew how to categorize, especially my grandmother's.
Wow, that's a
message to me.
You saying that. Wow.
So, until I read this book, I never really thought of it in that way. I thought of it as just I had a feeling. And now I really kind of think, you know, at that moment, my grandmother was kind of in both worlds, and she's the one who prompted me to go.
Mm. Wow.
So that
that's
was
incredible.
Yeah. That really so, thank incredible. You for that.
Man, thank you for telling me that. That's fascinating.
Now,
I appreciate that. You
can get the book wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon.
Yep, Amazon.com and my publisher, InnerTraditions.com. So yeah, pretty much you can grab it anywhere. And it's out on December. Oh, sorry, you already said that. Yeah, it will be.
Yeah, just came out. So I can't congratulate you on putting a book out quite yet because as we record this, it's not out, but congratulations on your first book ever. I think that's amazing. It's got to be such an incredible feeling when you actually have it. My nephew just published his first book, and the excitement when he got the actual book, it was just, it's so cool to actually hold the book in your hand.
It is very surreal. I'm being completely honest when I say that it actually doesn't feel like a real book, even when I'm holding it and looking at it. It's just, I can't even conceptualize it as a real thing. It's hard to explain.
But you did it. Feel real. You did it. Congratulations on that, Daniel.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I really appreciate it. Well, actually for you, evening.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You can thank me for taking time out of your day.
Oh, yes, it is. It's my morning, actually, here.
Oh, your morning. Wow.
And that wraps up our conversation with Daniel Burke about his book, Apparitions at the Moment of Death, The Living Ghost in Legend, Lyric, and Lore. You can purchase the book on Amazon and wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.